Joining me on the program, it's been a while because I've been away, patiently awaiting her return. Pam Colleen, how are you?
I'm great, Tom. How are you today?
I am terrific. Are you ready for the holiday madness?
I am. Are you ready to make your famous gravy, your turkey gravy?
Now, you would be so proud of me. Over the weekend, I made turkey stock.
Great. That's fantastic.
You would be.
Why
because
did you invite me for dinner, Tom?
Well, it was Thanksgiving. I'm just trying to think when we cooked the turkey. It was a while ago that we cooked the turkey, but I kept the carcass frozen.
Great idea.
So I froze the carcass, and then maybe we needed space in the freezer or in the garage. So finally, I was like, all right, this is. So Sunday, I made it and turned out great. And it was a lot of people. And I looked it up just to make sure. Last night I de-scummed the top, if you know what I mean. Got rid of the little fat layer on the top. Mm-hmm. Only because, not that I don't like fat, but that's not the purpose of stock. And it was nice and gelatinous.
Yes.
And it's not frozen, but it's nice and gelatinous. And it's like, yeah, because you extracted all the collagen and converted into gelatin from the bone marrow. This is what you want.
That's exactly what you want. It's fantastic to help you absorb the nutrition in the food that you're eating. It's fantastic in terms of its ability to heal the GI tract. So it's pure medicine, those homemade bone broths. They're fantastic for you.
Yeah, yeah. And a minimal, you put it on the stove. You put it on low, you let it simmer, and 3 hours later, you come back. Like, that's it. There's no work. I chop in two onions, a couple of carrots, throw some peppercorns, a bay leaf. That's it. It's not exhausting.
I was talking to a friend of mine that I play tennis with, and she was basically almost out of being able to play tennis because she had a very uncomfortable knee injury. And one day we were chatting, and I told her, I said, start making your own bone broth. Well, she's been doing her own bone broth now for 2 or 3 years, and she's back playing tennis, and she doesn't wear a brace on her knee anymore.
Wow.
And she says to me, she says, I'm sure it's the bone broth that helped her. So she was very, very confident about that. It was the only difference that she had integrated into her life. And since she's been doing the bone broth, her knees are stronger.
Now, I'm trying to think, though, because I have 5 mason jars of this. The next time for sure I need it will be over the holidays when I make a turkey. Instead of using store-bought chicken stock, I'll use that to make my gravy. But where else do I put it in? I guess other soups, like where else would soups, I incorporate it?
Yeah, absolutely. You can make soups, stews, sauces. You can sip on it instead of having a coffee or a tea. You can have it as a hot drink.
Oh, hello.
Yes.
A little turkey, turkey broth for dinner.
Absolutely. It's an amazing, refreshing, and very healing snack, if you will.
All right, perfect. Well, I just wanted to let you know, because we've talked about it before, and I'm not going to use the term like Hector or badgered me, but you've been like, oh, please, it's the easiest thing to do. Just forget about the meat. I mean, there's more to a turkey than just the meat. Use the carcass to create the stock. And I'm like, all right, finally I did it. It couldn't have been, well, I guess it could have been easier, but it wasn't that difficult. It really was not that difficult.
No, it's a no-brainer. The only difficulty I run into with the people who start to make bone broth is that they leave the lid too open. And so if they're simmering it overnight, they wake up in the morning and half of it is gone. So you have
right.
to make sure that you're not going to evaporate all the liquid in there by overexposing it to the air. So you do have to have the correct lid on your pot.
And I think my dad pointed out, longer is not necessarily better, although you can, because then you reduce it down to like a demi-gloss if you really cooked it long. But really, you're not looking to reduce it much, but you can. But 3 hours with the lid, so I had a big pot. I had a double pot, and with the lid on it, and 3 hours was, I was like, eh, good enough. And most people are like, yeah, that's plenty of time.
Yeah, if people want to look at a really healthy bone broth, Chef Lance Roll, I interviewed him last year with Andy here in London, and Chef Lance Roll, he's the flavor chef, and he does online stuff to show people how to make bone broth, and it's absolutely incredible. He's a terrific resource.
Now, someone just texted in, does chicken broth have the same effect?
Yes. Yeah, right, chicken and turkey. Yeah,
chicken and turkey.
People's favorite, Tom. I mean,
yeah.
I have people when they start making beef broth or fish broth, they don't really like the smell that it creates in the house. But for really across the board, for the most part, people prefer their turkey or the chicken broth.
And because we also buy whole chickens and whole turkeys, we have all these this carcass. We don't have usually a lot of bones. We have some bones, but when we buy beef. Because it's a smaller portion, I guess if we bought ribs or maybe if you bought a standing roast, you could get beef broth, but it would be of a smaller variety, wouldn't it?
It depends on the size of the roast that you start with. But yeah, and again, some people don't like the smell of the house when you're cooking or making your bone broth out of beef bones. It puts out a different odor.
Yeah.
But if you don't mind the odor, the liquid that you extract from that bone is going to be very healing, and it will be delicious in a lot of different recipes.
Yeah, oftentimes when they call for, you know, add water, forget adding water, add stock. That's when you add broth.
Right, when you're making rice, instead of just plain water, you could use the bone broth.
Yeah. Here's a great article I want to get to that has been in the news as of a couple days now. Obesity, there is no safe level of obesity, or there's a number of studies reviewing the idea of, quote, healthy obesity. What do you think of this? But I also fear, though, that if we think there's no healthy level of obesity, it will drive us to go unhealthily underweight.
Right. I think, though, that the article, if it's the same one that I read, they do say it's not the issue of being overweight. It's the issue of being obese.
So where do we draw the line between overweight and obese, though?
Well, the article was rather vague because we've talked about this in the past, where researchers here in Canada have determined that if you have a BMI, body mass index, of between 25 and 30, that is considered overweight, and that in all likelihood you're going to be healthier and live longer than people who have a lower BMI.
Right.
So being overweight is not the problem here. It's the obesity. And I think where it's a little vague in the article, but I think technically obesity happens when you have a BMI of 30 or over. And I know,
and even BMI is not
necessarily in the past.
Yeah.
I think there's measurements you can find online as to how to calculate your BMI, and I'm not up to date on all of that.
And even BMI, there's some issues in terms of using that as a measurement, because if you were quite muscular, for instance, it would be like you'd have a BMI. They don't take into account muscle mass. They just take into account weight. But there's a way to determine what your percentage body fat is. But that's a little, you'd actually have to do more work than stepping on the bathroom scale.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the hype around being overweight or what have you is also tied into making us feel as if we're fat when we're not fat, so that we are more likely to do low-fat dieting, or we're more likely to follow any kind of fad diet out there, or we're going to maybe join a gym or whatever. So there's a lot of fear-mongering going on around being overweight. But I think the authors of this recent study are correct. There's over 40 health-related problems to obesity, and it's a very, very costly and painful health condition to suffer with. And so I think a lot of people recently, Tom, I think you were just referring to this, is that they've been trying to say that you can be obese and be healthy, but the researchers here are saying that's just not true, and I do tend to agree with them on that.
When we come back, let's discuss this a little further. Pam Colleen is our nutritional consultant from London, joining us on the program. 905-688-2582, 1-877-610-2582 if you have a question for Pam. Here's a text question, Pam, going back to our broth. Do you have to break the bones to make the broth, asked Peggy. I don't think so, do you? All right, we'll ask her when we get back, I guess.
Sure.
We'll talk about that, but more about obesity, and is it a myth that you can be healthy and obese, next on 610-CKTV. Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, joins us on the program. And before we get back to, is there a can you be healthy and obese at the same time? Peggy wanted to know, do you break the bones when you make a broth, or you just throw them in? I thought you just threw it in and not worry about it.
That's right. You just take the whole carcass and you plunge it into the water and let it simmer for several hours, and you're good to go. You don't need to break the bones at all, no.
Getting back to the obesity issue, because there's a notion out there you could be possibly fit and fat. And this has been, I think, maybe some people are clinging to this in terms of, well, you know, my heart is strong, I walk a lot, I get a lot of exercise, I eat fine, all my metrics are okay, and we give, maybe not give a pass, but people try to claim they can be fit and fat.
No, I think that this is just a reflection of the frustration that people feel when they're struggling with obesity and they have so much trouble in terms of finding their optimal weight. Obesity is a complex issue, and the fact that people are getting very dangerous misinformation in and around weight loss, weight gain, et cetera. You know, people are getting some terrible information or advice as to how to lose weight. And so people get stuck in the obesity state for many, many years, even though they are taking initiatives or what they think are correct initiatives to find their optimal weight, but they just keep staying obese. So I think what ends up happening is they just throw up their arms and they think that, well, I'm doing everything right and I'm still obese. Therefore, well, I'm just going to resign to the fact that this is a lifelong sentence and I will have to declare that it's healthy because I'm doing everything healthy to find this optimal weight. So you see that they're stuck in this rut, and it doesn't surprise me that they want to believe that they're healthy, but if they were given the correct information, they would be able to find their optimal weight.
You have dealt with a number of obese clients, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm friends with a couple of them on Facebook, I believe. So, and formerly obese though, what advice? What is there advice or strategy, or what do you tell them in terms of making that shift? To lose the excess weight, right. What's the best advice? Because it's complicated. It's not just simple. If it was so simple, everyone would do it.
Right.
What do you tell them on how they do it?
One of my friends and clients is Catherine, and she's probably on Facebook with you. And I did a radio interview with her here in London just a few weeks ago, and people can find it in our archives. So she's not shy about what she's done to lose 100 pounds. She's about 6 feet tall, and she was at some point, I think, around 280 pounds. Somewhere in excess of that, probably.
Okay.
And
by all measurements, she needed to lose weight.
Oh, yeah. And she had been struggling for years and years and years. And so as soon as she started eating more animal fat in her diet, she started having some major victories. She did have an issue from her childhood. She had struggled with gallbladder attacks. So she did have a huge gallstone in her gallbladder that was blocking the release of her bile. So when she was eating animal fat, which was a healthy thing, of course, it was hard on her simply because she wasn't producing enough bile, or the bile wasn't descending into the small intestine to assimilate these very healthy animal fats. So she had to, unfortunately, end up having her gallbladder removed. So that was a variable. That was contributing to her obesity, was the fact that she did have what was a huge gallstone. In many cases, people don't necessarily have a single gallstone in the way. In many, many cases, people have hundreds of gallstones trapped in their bile duct system. And the bile duct system is rather expansive. So it goes all the way from, say, the liver to the pancreas. And when the gallstones are forming, people don't have symptoms, unfortunately. I call it one of Mother Nature's worst jokes that she could have played on us, is people can have a lot of digestive problems and not know it. There's no symptoms. There's no red flags.
But would gallstones or a gallbladder issue be atypical of people who...
No. I would be in shock if one of your listeners didn't have gallstones. And I'm just saying one. I mean, it's pervasive.
Okay.
I don't know anybody today who wouldn't be struggling with gallstones, but they just wouldn't have any symptoms. And so one of the things that will hold people back in terms of their ability to find their optimal weight involves this problem with gallstones. Not just, like I said, with Catherine, there was a huge gallstone in her gallbladder. There was just no getting around it. She did have her gallbladder removed. But what is even probably more problematic and more insidious is the fact that people can have hundreds of gallstones in their bile duct system, and it goes misdiagnosed. So people go to the medical doctor, they get scanned to see if they have gallstones, and the tests come back normal when they're really not normal. It'd be hard today to not have hundreds of gallstones trapped in the bile duct system simply because copper, because we're overexposed to copper, because they're adding copper to city water as an antifungal. And what copper will do is copper will push up estrogen, which pushes down progesterone. And if you look in the scientific literature, Tom, and you type in progesterone, estrogen, and gallstones, you're going to find out that this equation equals thick bile. And when you have thick bile, it's going to be more prone to stoning. Another thing that's going to make people more prone to having gallstones is whether or not they've ever followed a diet that has been low in animal fat. And so without the animal fat in the diet or adequate amounts of animal fat in the diet, bile goes to sleep. It doesn't need to show up on the scene, right? So it essentially forgets to work properly. It basically just literally goes to sleep. So this is what will also contribute to the formation of the gallstones. So when people return to their ancestral diet and start to eat animal fat, it becomes problematic, not because there's a problem with the animal fat. It's because the bile has gone to sleep and it's not working properly.
Pam, always instructive, always insightful. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Tom. You take care.
You too. Pam Killeen, nutritional consultant from London, Ontario. Interesting that, you know, we have this notion, can you be healthy and obese? Yeah, maybe you can. Apparently, no. No, you can't. However, that doesn't mean you have to be underweight as well. That the ideal weight for you, which is not obese, maybe slightly overweight, though, is okay. Yeah, Greg Campagna, perfect. You're in that sweet spot. Slightly overweight.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. You have my... I am carrying your excess weight.
Your leg is mine.
I have your... Whatever you need to put on, I have it right here in storage for you. I have it ready to go. Anytime you need it, you just let me know. I'll give it back to you. 29 minutes after 11 o'clock. When we come back as well... hey, speaking of Dylan, I got to tell this Dylan story.